football on off the ball.
Michael Duffy is, he's one of the best players that there has ever been probably in the League of Ireland. And at the moment, I'd say this last 2 years, 3 years even, he's just evergreen.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
There's a stylish range of Renault SUV hybrids, including the Austral, Captur and Symbios. Packed full of really innovative and intuitive tech designed to enhance your driving, it can give up to 1,100 kilometers in range from a full tank, it can run on purely electric up to 80% of the time in urban areas, and has all of the latest safety features, including pedestrian and cycling recognition. Great acceleration thanks to the hybrid powertrain. Hey Google, directions to Ravenhill. On this episode of Backseat Pundits, I was joined by former Ulster and Ireland player and a recent induction to the Rugby Hall of Fame, Stephen Ferris. Hey Google, play Off the Ball.
Delighted to be joined by Stephen Ferris in the brand new episode of Backseat Pundits, and great timing, Stephen, off great the back time. Of one of the most historic Irish performances against England at the weekend in Twickenham, and the Ulster boys were at the very centre of it.
Yeah, I suppose it's good chatting to you, Darb, at this stage because we're off the back of such a good win. I've watched a few of the episodes before and there's been probably a bit more negativity around Irish rugby than
definitely
there will be today. But yeah, look, we're really proud of what the Ulster boys have achieved in an Irish jersey so far in this Six Nations campaign. And if anything, they've probably been the pick of the bunch. Like, they have been the best players, and everybody around Ulster, everybody around Belfast in particular, are talking about Stuart McCloskey and Robert Balakoon and Nick Timoney and even Nathan Doak, who's sort of hanging in the wings, and a couple of others who are on the fringes. So very much looking forward to the next couple of weeks.
I suppose we'll get into the players specifically in a little while. We have plenty of time to do so. But first, can I just ask you, were you expecting that kind of game, or like that kind of result for Ireland to get? I suppose not many people even tipped us to win, or mind win by 21 points in the end.
Do you know what? Like, we were on the pitch and I was working at the game, and we were just walking on the grass, and I put my hand down. It was bone dry. Like, yeah. Bone dry, perfect conditions, really fast pitch. And if anything, it was definitely going to suit Ireland the way they can get their short passing game going. So in the opening 10 minutes, you could just tell that the physicality was there. You could tell that they weren't off it the way they were in Paris. And I didn't see the game going the way it did. I thought England would have outmuscled this more, kept it tighter, and obviously they won a number of scrum penalties, but that had no effect really on the outcome of the game. So Irish rugby's back, baby, that's what I say.
Exactly. The physicality thing, is that a mental thing coming into the game? Because not that it wasn't there against France and Italy, but it definitely wasn't there as much as it was against England. Is that just us getting up for such a big game like that? Or do you think there was something a bit more tactical to it?
I think going over to France, the weather conditions were obviously completely different. There was a lot of rain. The personnel that were involved in that game, you know, the high ball, a lot of box kicking, trying to win those second balls, it didn't come off for us. So tactically, I don't think that it was wrong. Yeah. Maybe just the team selection and the people on the night didn't perform. So Andy's obviously mixed it up incredibly well, given guys opportunities over the last couple of weeks, and then has reverted back somewhat to you know, the stable of guys that have served him so well over the last, what, 5-6 seasons. So he relied on them. I listened to Steve Borthwick pre-match in the game, and he talked about, you know, they've got half their team were on the British and Irish Lions tour the week, or, you know, in the last summer. You know, majority of the lads have won Grand Slams. You know, this is a team that has just got so much experience and have so much ability. And I was like, oh, geez, you know, he really does think we're you know, flying here at the minute. But we obviously haven't been over the last couple of weeks, and our Irish rugby has been criticised somewhat because of those couple of performances. But you got to say, Andy Farrell mentally got the guys in the right state of mind to go out there and perform.
How does he do that?
Good question. Sometimes guys need dropped. Sometimes guys need an arm around the shoulder. Sometimes there might be you know, people picked out in training that are made an example of. Sometimes it could be just doing a lot less in training. Sometimes it could be doing a lot more. Sometimes it could be boys that need to get into the gym more and expend more energy, and others are completely different. So that's where his man management skills come into it. We know that there's sports psychologists working around the squad, and they've chopped and changed over the last decade. So maybe tapping into a bit more of that as well. So I think it's a combination of so many things to get the headspace right, and that's why it was so impressive.
Yeah.
I think, and it wasn't just the headspace and the mentality of the players. I think when, you know, the camera shots were put up to the coaching box, the mentality of the coaches was
yeah,
absolutely there too. So yeah, that's where Andy Farrell and his coaching setup takes a huge amount of credit.
You mentioned kind of the talk before the game and the weeks coming up to it as well, I suppose, and even on this series we've been talking maybe a bit doom and gloom about the whole thing. Like, did you buy into that kind of talk before? Even, I suppose, I was in the pressers during the week in Twickenham on the Friday, and even some of the English journalists were putting it to not just the English players but the Irish players up for media that Ireland are in a decline. Not are Ireland in a decline, that they are.
Yep.
Saying it for almost a fact. Did you buy into that kind of talk at all?
Absolutely, yeah. I still do to a certain extent. I don't think one incredible performance puts out all the fires that have been lit over the last 3 or 4 months. The Autumn Nations series obviously was a bit of a wake-up call, especially that the last game against South Africa. We obviously didn't start the Six Nations that well. And yeah, like, I've got to prove the doubters wrong week in, week out. Because that's what they did for so long. That's the expectations. The bar has been so high for so long that once it goes down a couple of notches, everybody's writing them off.
Yeah.
And I think the team has come under a bit of pressure recently, and I think that's justified to a certain extent, because they talk about it themselves after the performance against France, and not as much after the performance against Italy, but you know, they haven't been playing brilliant. You know, they haven't hit their straps. Everything in training's going really well, but you know, they need to find their top gear. So they understand and know that they've been a little bit off it. So that's why the media, as you know, they jump all over negativity more than positivity sometimes. It creates a better headline sometimes. And I think you know, Andy Farrell and the lads have done so well to change the narrative around Irish rugby over the last week.
The player of the match, I think it's an absolute, it's a champagne problem when your kind of fans are debating who should have been man of the match. That's a great place to be. Yeah. Who was your man of the match?
McCloskey, but
yeah.
I thought
you would say that, yeah.
And I don't think it was even close, to be honest. He gave them so much from football. And I think the man of the match was actually mentioned before he made that track back and put Marcus Smith into touch. So like, that's going to be an iconic moment for Irish rugby, seeing him. And I don't know about you, but I've watched it about 100 times.
Yeah. What was your reaction to it live?
Media?
I couldn't leave when I was watching.
I was up the complete other end of the pitch, stuck in the corner, and didn't have a brilliant view, but I was looking at the big screen, and I know Stu has a good steady pace, but he wouldn't keep accelerating, where Marcus Smith is able to get away from people. But he just reeled him in. And something about Stuart, he has a ridiculous engine.
Yeah.
Like, he can go, he could have played another 40 minutes. He's just that type of player.
Yeah.
So robust. He was my man of the match, like, for sure. The bust that he made for the Balakoon try, the offloads in the first couple of minutes, which led to the penalty. The beautiful pass to Balakoon that got him on the outside of Arundel for the pass back into Tommy O'Brien. The huge hits that he made, dominant tackles, wrapping people up, getting in Henry Pollock's face. which is all.
Kind of, but not really.
But then, like, if you look at his persona and his character, he doesn't get flustered.
No,
he's sort of just the middle of the road all the time. If there's a scrap that breaks out or, you know, anything happening, he's just always nice and calm, cool and collected.
That's maturity though, isn't it? It's just experience.
But he's always been like that. He's always been like that, and he's always backed himself. I know there was the chat that Bayonne were interested in signing him, what was that, a year 18 months ago, before he signed a new deal. And I'm just delighted that he has signed the new deal. Like, I remember just chatting to him briefly before a game. I think it was at the Aviva, and I said, "How are you getting on?" I was like, "Congrats and you know, signing on again." He's like, "Oh no, hopefully I get a good crack, you know, just keep the head down." But what's he called now? The Fridge, is he in
the
France?
The Fridge, they've labelled him. I'm not gonna go for the French pronunciation, but yeah. The Fridge.
Le Fridge.
Which I think is actually putting him down a little bit too much. He's much more than just a... I was speaking to him after the game, straight in the mix zone, and I kind of put that to him that a lot of people have kind of labelled him as that 12, the hard-running 12 that just chucks the ball up the middle and gets metres for the faster backs. But, he's clearly more than that. And he was kind of saying there was a point where he kind of did listen to that, but he's at a point in his career now where he knows he's not that.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really care what other people think. What do you put it down to, him playing so well now? Is it just that he's gotten this opportunity now, or is it just he's coming into a great period of his career?
I think it helps when, like, he's been playing great for Ulster all season.
Yeah.
Playing really well. He's picked up a couple of knocks at the early part of the season, but something about Stewart, he's never injured for a significant period of time. He's always like, oh, if you've got a bad hamstring injury or something, I don't know, it's like magic. He's back and supposed to be out for 6 or 10 weeks, and he's back in half the time. He's a very good healer. He recovers well. He's obviously a good professional. But Ulster are playing well this season. He's been a big part of that. But when he takes a step up and he's into Ireland, he's surrounded by even better players.
Mm.
He's getting even more from football. He's even more confidence. And yes, the pace goes up and the intensity goes up, but he's match fit. He's battle hardened. And he's shown that over the last couple of weeks that he's, would you say, the in-form centre in world rugby?
Yeah. I was thinking about this after the game. It's going through different players. Like, you're looking at maybe Tialende is up there. Like France have kind of switched around their 12s a good bit. It's not a crazy thing to say at this point.
No, it's not. It's not at all. A couple of New Zealanders might have something to say about that. And as you say, Dale Ende at 12, who is quite similar to McCluskey.
Mm.
You know, he's a battering ram, but he's also got subtlety to his game. And defensively, very, very strong. Maybe defensively, you could say he's maybe a little bit stronger than Stuart McCluskey, but is he as good going forward? I don't think he is. So, like, it's from where Stuart has come from over the last 2 or 3 years to, like, be sat behind so many centres for so long.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was ready to sign that contract for Bayonne very quickly, and something, or maybe his wife or family or Ulster rugby twisted his arm. It's been the best decision for him. And thank goodness he's hung around, and he's having a huge impact on not just Irish rugby but Ulster rugby, obviously, here in Belfast.
Yeah.
He's one of the big stars now.
I always knew this was going to be a lot. This episode was going to be pretty much based on Stuart McCluskey. Might as well title it that way. But, like, it's a real sliding doors moment, that Bayonne interest, because I remember it happening, being like, oh god, no, don't let that happen, because maybe at the time he wasn't a key figure in Irish rugby. He was a key figure with Ulster. Yeah. So it was a shame that he was even looking elsewhere. But that was pretty much, I'd imagine, down to the international opportunities that he was getting. Thank God he stayed, because he's so keen now. It almost seems crazy that he's only getting a run of games now. I know there's great players, but from the outside looking in, if you're from France or England, you're thinking, where's this guy been? He's unbelievable. He's 33.
What? I know. I must send him a text here, say we call him for a cup of coffee.
Sorry.
Get the car pulled up outside, get him in for a quick chat. But yeah, like, I don't know. He's just one of these guys that's just persevered.
Mm.
And I think you got to take your hat off to that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of lads just jump around for the money and just jump around. You know, they're in form and a contract comes their way and they'll jump ship straight away. But I think that's something that's nice about Irish rugby, is the majority of players do hang around. And it's a gripe with a lot of Leinster supporters. It's like, why are we hanging on to so many guys who are getting maybe 8 to 10 URC games per season and that's it? You know, they're never giving themselves a huge opportunity to play international rugby, because as soon as it comes to the big games, all the big dogs are wheeled back in. Where up in Ulster, it's obviously it's not like that, just because of such a smaller player pool. But there's other guys there, like Rob Balakoon was offered to go to Bath, I believe, last summer. He hung in there, obviously injured quite a bit, and maybe Stuart and Rob feel like, do you know what? I have something to give Irish rugby.
Yeah.
I do. Like, if I can get fit and get a chance or get a couple of chances, I back myself to do it. And fair play to both of them. They were the two best players in the pitch for me on Saturday.
Do you think we've done a good job up to this point of developing that kind of depth? I suppose that's always been an issue, especially with that seven jerseys that we've been so reliant on Van der Flier. But now we're finally starting to see some guys come through. Is that a little bit too late, though? Did we wait a little bit too long to bring those guys in?
In my opinion, yes. But international rugby is about winning your next game. And if you don't win your next game, like we've seen in France, all of a sudden you become this bad team, or you know, you're in a downward trajectory. But yeah, I think we still need to strengthen in certain positions. Like if Sam Prendergast or Jack Crowley goes down, are we all confident that Harry Byrne can step in and, you know, do the same job?
Yeah.
Nobody knows, because we haven't seen him yet. So we'd love to see some international minutes into Harry Byrne. Gus McCarthy's obviously not there, and it's Tom Stewart that's in. So if one of the hookers goes down, are we sure that Tom Stewart can play at international rugby at the top level? Yeah. We're not sure. So I think those three positions, scrum half, the other one with Nathan Doak, if one of the scrum halves goes down, like it's, or, you know, both go down, you need to be, have yeah. some minutes to get in. I think hooker, out half and scrum half are three really key positions. We need, in my own opinion, need to grow that area of the game just a little bit. So a few of the boys have been released this week, play for their clubs. Doakey's one of them, obviously. Tom Shirt's one of them. Big Izzy's back for Ulster as well.
Yeah.
And a few other boys back to Leinster, Munster and Connacht, so they might get some minutes this week. So it's a big week for those guys too, because if they have a terrible game, they're not giving themselves much chance of getting a game against Wales. But if they blow the lights out, get man of the match, their team get a good victory away from home or whatever it may be, maybe gives Andy Frost something to think about.
Yeah, I myself can't imagine them making too many changes for the last two games, because they probably still feel that a title is still on here, so they want to win every game, pick up bonuses if they can. But this summer, this new tournament, the summer and in the autumn, do you think that's a good chance now to load in new players? Rugby Nations Championship, kind of an unknown beast, but it probably won't be too different to what we had before. But there's more games, more opportunity for lads to be blooded.
Yeah, like, not really sure what way Andy Farrell will be thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
And how he's going to approach it. Do they take a completely different approach? And as you say, almost a good few of those guys from the A squad that played down in Limerick, unfortunately took a bit of a hiding. Like, I suppose it depends on how the provinces do over the next couple of months in the URC and the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. But yeah, I'm all about giving guys opportunities. I don't think it's about handing out caps just for the sake of handing out caps. You gotta go and earn it. Like, you gotta be playing week in and week out and playing really well, and if the boys are doing that, then I think they should be rewarded and given a chance on the international stage. But Andy Farrell knows he can rely on his core group of players, I suppose that counts for a hell of a lot. But yeah, come the series in the summer, I'd like to see a few more changes as well.
Yeah, we're just rolling up to half a day right now, coming up Raven Hill. Do you miss playing at all? We talked a lot about injuries here today. Do you ever miss, you know, the big days in Raven Hill or down the Aviva? Or do you miss those days?
It's funny, we just drove past a big sign that says Hope. But thankfully that's outside the local church. Mount Marion here on the left, McGregor Road just runs up beside it. You know, the flats across the way. This is East Belfast. This is where it's the home of Ulster Rugby, is in this area. And it was the same for me when I played. Like, you know, I made the same drive every week. Usually picked up, you know, a teammate or something en route. Like, I made my Ulster debut when I was 19 or 20. And it was a brilliant place. I remember chatting to Stephen Jones, obviously played for the Scarlets, played for the Wales, played for the British and Irish Lions. And I was sitting and standing in the swimming pool, we were just doing like a pool recovery or something, having a chit chat and a bit of crack. And he was like, oh, what's going on with Ulster Rugby? Like, I hear there's plans, you know, to change the stadium and all. Like, this is 2010, 2009, 2010. I says, oh yeah, like, I think they're going to be passed, and you know, just needs to, the facilities need to be brought up to spec. He says, what are you talking about? Every team hates going there, because as soon as you run out of the changing rooms, you run round down in the corner of the pitch, you're met with a 40 mile an hour wind, sideways rain, and the last thing that you want to do is go and have a game of rugby. He was like, why do you want to make it easier for teams to come to? And he said, that's a good point, I must mention that to them. But yeah, it is obviously a 3G pitch and stuff now as well, which suits the way Ulster want to play. And yeah, some special nights, some special days. You know, one of my first European games, we played against Toulouse, beat them 27-3 or 30 points to 3. Huge day, beat Leicester Tigers when they were in their pomp by 40 points. Went away the next week and got beaten by 40 points, like, in the return fixture. Only team I never beat there was Leinster.
Never Leinster in Belfast.
No. Me personally, no.
Doesn't happen too often anyway, too. To be fair, you have probably missed too many of those results.
I know. We drew 12-all, and like all the big hitters were playing, like Darce was playing, Dricko was playing, Leo Cullen was playing, Malcolm O'Kelly was playing, like, you know, for us as well, with Bestie, we had, I think, Johan Muller, you know, a few of the imports that were brought in as well, and that was their best chance. But it was a terrible, terrible night, weather-wise. So that's the closest it came. But
did you ever beat Leinster?
I don't think so.
Jesus.
Do you know, I never played against Leinster in the RDS in my career.
Really?
Never, no. Never in the RDS. And missed out on the final through injury when we finished the top seeds. And ended up having to play there because our stadium couldn't hold the capacity.
Yeah.
So instead of David Humphreys bringing it to Aviva or something, he brought it to RDS. That was a good move. So no, never played against them away. Never played against them in Donnybrook. Never played against them. Yeah. So there you go. I think three or four times I played against, obviously, Champions Cup final.
Yeah.
Don't want to talk about that.
I was going to ask you, is that was maybe three times in Belfast?
Yeah. Jeez.
That 2012 final, that
I told you not to talk about
it. Yeah, sorry.
You brought it up.
So the resurgence of Ulster is kind of remarkable, really, isn't it? I was looking at the stats. So, say, last year in the Six Nations, Ulster players managed just 30 minutes. And that was two bench appearances from Mal Herring and Ian Henderson. Now, this Six Nations, fast forward 12 months, 670 minutes. Just in the first three games, and they're all new players. They're not Rob Herring or Ian Henderson not involved. That's remarkably, really, isn't it?
You're doing your research.
Well done. Hello, that's my job, isn't it? Yeah.
Didn't actually realize that myself, but no, with Ian Henderson and Rob Herring left out of the Six Nations squad, it felt like there was a bit of a changing of the guard and getting rid of not all the older players, but where there's strength and depth in some of the players coming before them, that they'd be given the opportunity, and they have been granted. Those two players that you mentioned are still going to have a huge impact on what happens behind those walls behind us here at the Affidea Stadium, because they're very important players to Ulster Rugby. But yeah, those guys are getting opportunities, and I think you got to commend the way that Ulster Rugby have played this season under Richie Murphy. And if they weren't winning most weeks and they weren't high up the table, then with some of those players that have got those match minutes you referenced there, be involved. They might not have been. So it all starts here. You know, if you want to climb the ladder and become a fully fledged Irish international and take the next step and become a British and Irish Lion, then this is where it starts, and this is where you have to play well every single week.
I suppose Ian Henderson's, as you said, big impact still to play, regardless of whether he gets involved with Ireland again. He almost kind of, you mentioned that interview earlier that he did with yourselves around, you know, giving Ireland or giving Ulster lads, young lads, a chance at Ireland. He almost nearly sacrificed his own career, the rest of his own Irish career, for saying that, because obviously that's going to rub up some people the wrong way, but that's really the mark of a captain. He still has such a huge impact in there.
Yeah, like, I think if Andy Farrell was stood in Ian Henderson's position, he would have said exactly the same thing. And I don't think that might have been the reason why he wasn't involved. Has he been the best second row for Ulster every single week here? Maybe not, but he's done a bloody good job of captaining the side, and he's a stalwart, like, of Ulster Rugby. He's someone who's been around a hell of a long time, and will he go into coaching? You know, he's in the the twilight of his career. Hopefully has a couple more years to give. He hasn't played a huge amount of rugby either. So maybe if you forget about the international bit and just fully focus on giving your last couple of years to Ulster Rugby. I think Ulster Rugby are rubbing their hands. They'll be like, oh, we really want you to play for Ireland, Ian, but we probably want you to play for us even more.
We love having you in the building every week.
Yeah, and like it's good for the young guys to come in, and Hendy drives big standards, and I think he'll obviously be missed around the Irish setup a little bit, but you know, I think he can be delighted with how his career has went for Ireland, and if he didn't get another cap for the rest of his days, I'm sure he'd be happy enough with what he achieved.
Do you enjoy coming back here for games?
Yeah.
Never get sick of it.
No, I don't get sick of it. Like, obviously the big European nights, Ulster in the Challenge Cup this season, granted they're doing very, very well. And they've got a home tie against the Ospreys in not so long time away. So I think it's the big days of Toulouse at home, you know, Munster coming up the road. Stade Francais, when I get eye gouged twice in the one game, and like, those are the days that stick with me. Like,
yeah. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us on the later episode of Backseat Pundit.
Thank you very much for having me.